Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good Wednesday morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I just realized that I forgot to put in my contact. That helps me to read things, and so I don't have that today, so I'm going to rely on my glasses to help me see things, but hope you're having a great Wednesday morning. It's a beautiful day here in Texarkana, Texas. Well, I want to talk today about what's going on in the Southern Baptist Convention. The Southern Baptist Convention is very important in America, the largest Protestant, we would call it Protestant denomination, although the SBC is really not a denomination. It's a convention of churches, but it's the largest in America, even though it's down. It's down 260,000 members from 2023, according to AI. 12.7 million people in America call themselves Southern Baptists, and it is important. It has six seminaries, and it trains, according to Rod Martin, it trains a third of all the students going into the ministry that are being trained in theological studies. And so it's an important entity, and it's an entity that is under attack. Obviously, the devil doesn't want the Southern Baptist Convention to do well. He doesn't want any Christian entity to do well. He doesn't want you to do well in your Christian life. He doesn't want your church to do well. He comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But today, I welcome to the program my friend Dr. Willie Rice. Dr. Willie Rice has recently just submitted his name to be nominated for the presidency of the Southern Baptist Convention as we meet in June in Orlando, Florida. Willie Rice is the senior pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Clearwater, Florida. He's served there since 2004, and a native of the Tampa Bay area, has 40 years of pastoral experience. He is a husband and a father of three children and a grandfather of six. The grandchildren are wonderful, aren't they, Willie?
Yes, and we just had, we're actually, that number is eight now.
That's eight.
I had two in the last year, and one was last week, so we're up to eight.
Wow. Well, congratulations. So what's,
thank you. Thank
what's
you.
The mix on grandkids?
Three are boys. We had our third boy last week, and five are girls, and all precious. But little Wesley Cade was born over the weekend, so we're grateful for that.
How cool is that? Well, Willie, I'd ask you to come on the program because last week a synodoc dropped that was very exposing, I would say. I would not imagine the SBC leadership likes this this latest documentary from the Founders Ministry, actually from a group, what's it called, Politico or
Cross.
Something.
Yeah, Cross Politic, somebody, I think out in the Moscow, Idaho group out there. But I think there were some guys that used to be in Founders. I don't quite understand all the connections there, but a group out in Idaho puts it together.
Well, it's a mini documentary. It's about 42 minutes long, and it's titled How the SBC, the Southern Baptist Convention, Got Played. And Willie, I know you watched that. I watched that, and it was... It was very eye-opening. It presented the case that this wasn't just some random thing, that this was kind of mastermind to hurt the Southern Baptist Convention. Big, broad question. Do you think that what happened in the SBC over the last few years has been a coordinated effort to take it down or turn it in a leftward direction?
It's a great question, and it's kind of a, I'm not trying to dance around it, it's kind of a yes and no. You know, I don't know that, by the way, the documentary is devastating, and it's, but it's accurate, it's powerful, it needs to be watched, it's sobering. I don't know is, you know, one answer, Jeff. I don't know that somebody sat in a room, in a smoke-filled room, you know, and plotted some grand conspiracy. I do know we have a spiritual enemy who is a conspirator,
Right.
and that he puts, there's a spiritual war going on, a battle going on, in
Yes.
which he puts pieces in place, like a chessboard, as it were, to steal, kill, and destroy. And so I do think there is a spiritual conspirator at work. I think some of the people who got caught up in it were certainly not trying to do harm. Some were
Yes.
actually trying to do good. But I do think that the title of the documentary is accurate. We got played. We got played.
Yeah, you know, that was something that Tom Askell had said very famously, and I think that was shown on the synodoc that founders did that came out by what standard? And he was
right.
Sitting there, kind of defeated on a couch, just saying, "We just got played." Now the newest documentary, "How the SBC Got Played," it details, Willie, five steps that were taken that are, according to the documentary, these are steps that that are kind of proven. If you want to hurt an organization, take over an organization, do this, and it's five steps to do that. And it kind of details in the video the five steps that were taken that were textbook. Now that seems to be something that was coordinated, but do you think that was just they stumbled upon that, or were they thinking we're going to do this, we're going to do that?
Yeah, it depends who they is in that sense. I thought that was one of the most interesting parts of the documentary. I was not familiar with that book. It was referencing a book, I think, entitled Crossed Fingers from the 90s about how Presbyterian denomination was taken over by liberalism. And it, I'd never heard of those five steps laid out like that. But it laid them out, and wow, it is a grand scale. I want to tell you this. I don't know that somebody sat in the back room and orchestrated it. My
right.
guess is no. My guess is we have a spiritual conspirator and people played a part.
Right.
But if people had sat in a room and come up with a grand scheme, they couldn't have come up with a better one or a more devastating one. Better not in terms of good, but better in terms of just effectiveness. Their thesis of those five steps to me was stunning. And when you see it now, you go, wow, that's exactly what happened.
Well, just so our listeners know what we're talking about. So the playbook phases, as outlined in the video, number one, find the moral vulnerability that the other side can't defend. And the SBC was primed by earlier concessions on social justice, racism, apologies, and making the leaders quick to accept the guilt. And then number two, make institutional self-defense look like complicity. So that was the attorney-client privilege, which there was pressure on those guys. So the executive committee members voted to give up attorney-client privilege, which is just so stupid. But we voted to do that. Willie, is that something you can get back, or once it's given over, it's done?
Oh, I think you can. I think that's, again, you'd need to talk to a lawyer about that. My understanding, but boy, I'm way out of my field here on the legal expertise, is that it was a narrow definition to give up attorney-client privilege in that particular case for that particular investigation. So I don't think we have, to my knowledge, Jeff, we haven't permanently waived attorney-client privilege. I think we have it and going forward. I think it was narrowly for that specific investigation. And that was done on the floor of the convention. And the messengers were steered. The vast majority of them, haven't been involved in legal matters. The vast majority of us, I mean, we knew about attorney-client privilege, but if you've never been sued, if you're not a lawyer,
right.
if you really don't know what's going on. And looking back, I just wish somebody had stood up and said, you cannot make a legal decision. You're not a lawyer. You wouldn't do this for your own estate. You wouldn't do this for your own family. You're waiving a historic legal right that is founded in our laws and our tradition that go back centuries. This isn't to protect guilty people. is to protect people who are innocent. And you have attorney-client privilege for a reason. And yet we were steered on the floor of the convention to do it. Most of the messengers who raised their ballot and approved that simply thought they were being good people.
Right.
They thought they were being transparent. They thought we have nothing to hide, therefore we have nothing to fear. And we were steered into a horrific decision. And I have great sympathy. I was on the floor then. I remember thinking, I don't really know what's going on here. Honestly, I don't even know how I voted on that motion. It was like, I
Right.
didn't understand the discussion about attorney-client privilege. But the people who made the mistake need to own it. And the people who steered it need to admit they steered us in a bad direction.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Willie, the things that bother me, as I think they bother a lot of pastors, a lot of Southern Baptist church members, you have guys that made statements. Russell Moore made statements about so much sexual abuse being covered up in the Southern Baptist Convention. That's just flat not true. And that's been proven to be not true. So it's like, how do you make that statement? You never write the statement, but you know when you're saying it that you're just making this stuff up. The people that accused Mike Stone at the convention there in Nashville, that he went after Hannah Kate, and you know, at the convention floor, or you know, outside the convention in the atrium there. That's just not true. They knew what they were saying was false. I have a real problem with people that do that.
You know, Jeff, it's what makes it complex, and the reason it was so effective is that, you know, two things can be true at once. And I want to be very, very clear, and I know you would agree with this. Again, sexual abuse is horrific. Number two, it does occur. There are predators, and predators prey upon children. It has happened in churches, and there are cases. I know about them personally. I've spoken about them personally. There was one even in my family where people, their wolves come in sheep's clothing. Wolves come in shepherd's clothing. There have been cases, and there have been cases where the SBC did not handle it as well as we could have or should have, and as well as we now have. Every institution in American life has learned about more about sexual abuse. There's not a single one. Schools, Boy Scouts, Little
Right.
Leagues, churches have learned about the importance of stopping predators and protecting children. And if that's all this conversation had been about, there would be no problem. There would be no division. Southern Baptists would be united around a statement that says, we have to do better at making sure we protect children. How can you not want to do better? You always want to do better to
Right.
protect children and stop predators. But what happened is they turned that reality. Yes, there's a challenge in stopping terrible people. They turned it into a massive conspiratorial crisis, as if there was some vast organizational effort to cover it up. And that was the accusation. And it was called an apocalypse. Remember that? I think Moore called it an apocalypse. And that is what is not true. That's what you're referencing. There was no systemic cover-up. There was no systemic habitual problem. In fact, when you look at the statistic, it bears out that our churches were actually some of the safest places for
Right.
children to be over the last decades. I want them to be safer. We should not lose sight of that. Yes, there are examples of sexual abuse. Yes, there are wolves in sheep's clothing. Jesus told us there would be. We
Right.
want to stop them, but there was no systemic organizational effort to cover that up.
Exactly. And that's what the report showed. There wasn't, we didn't learn anything new except that Johnny Hunt got involved in some situation that was consensual and that he dealt with, ruined that poor guy's ministry. But that was pretty much the extent of what was uncovered. Well, we're talking to Dr. Willie Rice. He's pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Clearwater, Florida. He is a candidate for the presidency of the Southern Baptist Convention. It's going to convene in June in Orlando, Florida. What happens in the SBC is important to Christianity in America. So you're going to want to stay on board as we continue to talk about this. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here on American Family Radio.
The Word of God tells us many times in one form or another, fear not. Many people are very fearful about some of the many perils and dangerous happenings that are going on in the world. Psalm 91 verses 1 and 2 tell us, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust." I'm Joseph Parker, and we here at the American Family Association would like to remind you, fear not, put your trust in the Lord. We'd like to both encourage and challenge you to aggressively put your faith to work. And one way to do that is to pray Psalm 91 daily for yourself and your family, and keep your trust in Him. If you'd like to get a copy of the Psalm 91 prayer for yourself, email us here at psalm91@afa.net. Again, that's psalm91@afa.net.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
You look at three of the four justices there in Colorado that voted to remove him from the ballot. They all came from Ivy League schools, schools that had been created as divinity schools. What a picture of the apostasy in America when it comes to the church.
Stay informed with Tony Perkins and his guests on Washington Watch, weekdays at 4 p.m. Central on AFR, or catch up anytime with the podcast at afr.net.
On the next Focus on the Family, former U.S. Senator Ben Sasse shares about his recent cancer diagnosis as he reminds you of the most important priorities in life, your relationship with God and your family. It's a touching conversation next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Every day, thousands of mothers with unplanned pregnancies are deciding not just about the future of their baby, but the future of their own lives.
The enemy just kept telling me, no, you don't deserve it. You don't deserve to be a mom. You don't deserve the good things that happens to people that are pregnant and they do the right things.
That's where the Ministry of Preborn steps in. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas of the country, shining a light into the darkness and bringing new life to women like Valeria.
It was like the beginning of my healing journey of knowing that I am enough because God is enough. When I saw my baby and when I heard her heartbeat, I just knew.
To learn more about Preborn's life-saving work, call pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. I'm talking to my friend Dr. Willie Rice, the pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Clearwater, Florida. He's been there 22 years. Is that right, Willie?
That's correct. Thank you, Jeff. Yep,
22 years.
This fall.
Okay, I'm 23 years at First Baptist Texarkana. Sadly, there are not a lot of us that have tenures that go that long. It seems like less and less pastors are staying at churches for the duration of their ministry. I know you've had other ministries, but 22 years is a long time in the SBC life.
It's great. There's so many joys of a long pastorate. I met a guy last week in South Georgia, 40 years at his church. Can you believe that? 40 years. And so there are some of us, and it's a beautiful thing to invest your life in a place and watch people grow up around you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know for a lot of guys, I mean, and you probably have these stories, I know I do, you're going to hit problems in your church at some point, and you can bail out and run to another church, but then you're gonna hit the same problems. I mean, people are people.
That's right. That's part of the beauty of a long church, you know, a long tenure at a church. Somebody asked me about that. I said, you don't really pastor the same church for 22 years. Churches are dynamic organisms. They change. People change. Epochs change. Eras change. And so it's there have been two or three or four, you know, eras in our time at Calvary. And so you grow with it. You start to try to, you know, stay fresh, walk with the Lord. Every day is new. Every day is a joy.
Amen.
And yes, there are problems, but it's a good thing to work through the problems, you know.
Yes. Well, and I've noticed this, the longer that a pastor stays, the problems start to diminish because people, when you've been there a long time, you've kind of proven your worth, and people trust you. You know, unless you do something really stupid or sinful, yeah, people will trust you. And then it's those latter years can really be fruitful. Well, we've been talking about the new mini documentary, How the SBC Got Played, from Cross Politic, which has some Founders Ministry connections to it. The Founders Ministry had a movie that came out in 2019, a synodoc called By What Standard, where it was calling out issues in the Southern Baptist Convention. One of the things that we mentioned right before the break, Willie, was people that said things that were just flat not true. They made accusations that where they said they had information that would just blow the lid off, like cover up in the SBC. As you pointed out, you know, anytime you have people getting together, large groups of people, whether it's in public schools, whether it's the Boy Scouts or the Catholic Church, Southern Baptist Convention, all our convention of churches, you're going to have some terrible things happen. You're going to have shootings. You're going to have sexual abuse that would take place. As much as a church will have security, will have things in place to make sure that doesn't happen, you can't police 24/7 everything that might take place, but you can deal with it when it comes about. And from the reports, the Guidestone report or Guidepost report, the Southern Baptist Convention weren't covering this stuff up. Maybe they didn't handle it as well as they could have, but it was nothing where we're trying to shuffle this guy that we know is an abuser over to this church or that church, similar to what the Catholic Church was guilty of and the Boy Scouts have been guilty of. But let's talk a little bit about the Mike Stone thing, because Mike Stone was running for the presidency of the Southern Baptist Convention. He was the Conservative Baptist Network's candidate. This is in 2021. He was accused of berating a sex abuse survivor at the convention hall there a day before the vote, which was just flat not true. And people got up, pastors got up and said, well, I heard it, and it went on. Talk a little bit about that, because that just seems so evil to me.
You know, I've gotten to know Mike well. He's become really a friend. I've been very open about this. I think you and I have talked about this, Jeff. I didn't know Mike at the time. I knew the other candidates much better. And actually, I didn't vote for Mike at the time. I was kind of on the other side of that. It was what I saw in the sexual abuse reform movement that actually kind of awakened me to some of the problems. But I hadn't seen those in 2021. I was bothered by what was going on the floor, and I didn't understand it. I think like probably most of the messengers. And it would be another year before I really saw this. But looking back on it, what happened to Mike Stone is a travesty. It was a political hit job. That's what it was. It was a political hit job, and it was well orchestrated. You're not even bringing up the fact that there were leaks of secretly recorded conversations. I'm still astounded that that was not more of a story than it was. You had entity heads recording other entity heads in the SBC without their knowledge or without their permission in private, high-level conversations about sensitive matters. Mike Stone, who was chairman of the board of the executive committee, was in one of those conversations that was secretly recorded without his knowledge. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing in there that's like, this wasn't like, I've heard it described as whistleblowing. It has, no. This was a high-level conversation about how to handle these sensitive matters. And then carefully edited transcripts were released that made them look insensitive to survivors of sexual mm-hmm. abuse and hard-hearted. When actually, Mike Stone has revealed, it's his story, that he himself is a survivor of sexual abuse. So cruel to do that. But it was released right before that election. The letters, a letter that had been written months before, And John Whitehead kind of documents that. In fact, there's evidence it had been written a year before. But a letter is released just right before the convention. And all of that is like a well-orchestrated political hit job. The thing that happened in the hallway, I only heard about it afterwards. I think it exploded online, but there were rumors that he had mistreated a survivor, mm-hmm. and that he had harangued her and she was in tears when he left.
Right.
And the truth is, if you know Mike Stone, that's laughable, because one of the things about Mike is he is very self-controlled. He is very precise. Mm-hmm. His volume doesn't get too loud. He's just a very direct person. And the idea that he would have raised his voice and been harsh is almost laughable when you know Mike. So, what he has said is there's a video disproving some of the allegations, because it would prove that when he left, nobody was upset, nobody was crying, and so forth. I don't know. I mean, I've grown to where I have a high degree of confidence in Mike Stone's word. And Mike Stone has said, please release that video, because it would exonerate me. It would confirm everything I've said. I think it ought to be released, by the way. And the people who said that should just apologize. We've all probably done that, Jeff, where you repeated something because you thought it might be true. It mm-hmm. led into a bias, confirmation bias. Listen, there's some words I wish I could take back, and I've had to apologize, and it's hard, right? It's hard,
right?
But we should just say, hey, I repeated gossip, and that wasn't true. And I know Mike Stone well enough to know if they would ask for forgiveness, he would grant it.
Sure.
It was sad. The gossip, the attack, the well-orchestrated political hit job, it was a shameful chapter.
Okay, so Willie, we were talking about the mastermind of this, these five steps that are recorded in the video. But now I agree with you. I think the devil is behind it all, obviously, because he wants to steal, kill, and destroy. But as far as going after Mike Stone, that was somebody coming together in some conference room and saying, hey, what are we going to do here? We don't want the conservatives to get control of the Southern Baptist Convention. It seems like to me, because otherwise you just let the chips fall where they may. If the people vote for Mike Stone, they vote for Mike Stone.
When so who would have,
huh?
Yeah. When you're releasing, again, privately recorded tapes of a conversation without that person's knowledge, it's one thing to record a conversation, but when you're recording it and they don't know it and you're trying to trap them, that means you believe they're evil, like that you believe they're unethical and they're evil. And that is what I think people believed about Mike Stone and Ronnie Floyd, who was the other one in there. I'm sure they see themselves as whistleblowers, but it's ridiculous when you look at it. And when you look at the tapes, it's ridiculous. Those men didn't say anything wrong. They were trying to solve a problem. And yet the way those tapes were edited, yes, that absolutely was orchestrated. And I think it absolutely was orchestrated to make sure Mike Stone didn't win the presidency of the SBC.
Willie, let me ask you this, because you've submitted your name to be nominated as the president. The SBC is, as we said at the top of the program, the SBC is important in America. It's important for American Christianity. It makes a difference. And if I'm the devil, I would want to destroy the SBC too. Just like you took down the Methodists and the Presbyterians and have it go the way of those mainline denominations. So for you personally, you look at the Southern Baptist Convention. Let me ask you a couple of different questions. Number one, why do you personally think it's worth it for you to get involved in that arena where you could get smeared and you could have things happen to you like they happened to Mike Stone?
Well, I've had a taste of that a little bit. Nothing like Mike dealt with, and I've had people warning me as much as this week. You need to be ready. You need to be ready. We just have to trust the Lord with those things and try to be ready. But, I love the Southern Baptist Convention. The Southern Baptist Convention is a wonderful group of people. We are talking about some of the challenges and some of the problems, but there's a reason why it's in the line of fire. I've been looking at some statistics by a brother online recently, a guy named Ryan Burge, who I don't know, but he's been releasing a number of some points of data in regards to religiosity and its impact in America. And here's the bottom line conclusion of a lot of data. Evangelicals are the bulwark against moral insanity in America. I would love to tell you the Roman Catholics are there and our Jewish friends are there and so forth. No, no. When you look at the size and you look at the moral convictions, it's evangelicals. Unfortunately, many Roman Catholics are very, very liberal, even despite some of their church's teachings. When you look at the numbers, it's evangelicals. If you remove evangelicals from the equation or you diminish their impact, we are the UK. We're Western Europe. It's we are the last standing bulwark against moral insanity and complete paganism in America. The Southern Baptist Convention may not be the only bulwark of evangelicalism, but it's the largest by far. Now, we have others that have actually been a little stronger and bolder than we have, especially over the last few years. But Southern Baptists are by far the largest. I mean, it's not really close. The largest group of evangelicals in America. So if we're not the only bulwark, we're the biggest one at least. And if it falls, the impact on evangelicalism will be huge. And if evangelicalism does not hold the line of biblical convictions, the impact on America and indeed the world, I'm not trying to overstate it, but indeed the world would be huge. So you can understand why conservative, Bible-believing, convictional evangelicals are under attack, and you can therefore understand why the Southern Baptist Convention would be under attack.
Willie, do you see a parallel between what's going on in the SBC and what's going on in the nation as far as just moving it to the left?
Of course. I think, you know, when you look at church life, sometimes you can think, well, it should be completely separate from the culture, but it's sometimes downstream of culture. Sometimes it's the upstream of culture. I mean, we would want the church to be influencing the culture, and I think it does. And yet the culture also, and the cultural moment certainly impacts the church. It is the moment in which we live. It is the cultural milieu in which we exist and serve. So what you see going on in the broad culture, which is an attack upon, again, moral truth, family, human sexuality, gender, all of those issues are part of a demonic strategy to steal, to come back to your line from John, the Gospel of John, to steal, kill, and destroy. That's what the devil wants to do. And so if he can lie to you, and he's been doing it for how many years? Well, he's been doing it since the beginning of time, but he's been doing it about marriage, about human sexuality, about gender, because if you destroy the family, you destroy a civilization. So all of this is part of a grand spiritual battle we're in, and that is why it is worth fighting for our local churches. Yes, our local churches are the great bulwark, and but it is also worth fighting for this convention of churches known as the Southern Baptist Convention, and that we want it to be strong and convictional and bold.
Amen to that. Willie, I had Erwin Lutzer on the program a year or so ago, and I was asking him, I said, where do you see America in the seven letters to the seven churches? You know, we've probably heard, well, we've become Laodicea, lukewarm. He said no. He said he thinks America is more like the church in Sardis, where the Lord says, wake up and strengthen the things that remain. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's what jumped to my head. And of course, the letters are to churches, not to a nation, as you know. But what you're saying is, what is the church situation in America right now? Like, where are we at? And again, there are various ways to interpret those seven letters, obviously, in terms of an eschatological framework.
Sure.
But I agree with what Erwin said. It's the first thing they thought, that when you look beyond our little corner, Jeff, we're living in an age of apostasy. Don't just look at Southern, you know, evangelicals or the Southern Baptist Convention. Look at all of these evangelical groups. We're living in an age of apostasy. So I do think, wake up, strengthen what remains. You have a name that you're alive. Many do, but many are dead. So we need to strengthen what remains, and we need to pray for renewal and awakening in our land. And what happens in the SBC is a very important part of that.
Yes. Well, we're talking to Dr. Willie Rice, the pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Clearwater, Florida. He's going to be have his name submitted to the presidency of the Southern Baptist Convention when we meet in June in Orlando, Florida. I'm looking forward to that meeting. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. When we come back, we'll have more of Willie. Don't go away.
Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net. Hey, I'm curious. Would you help AFA continue to stand in the gap for future generations of our families? You know, we rely on the generous gifts of people like you, and you can help keep the mission of AFA going strong well into the future with planned giving through the AFA Foundation. If you have questions, we can answer them and then help you set up a charitable gift annuity or a bequest. You'll leave a legacy that will impact your grandkids and beyond. Visit afafoundation.net to find out more. Satan wants to destroy God's sacred design for marriage and family. How do we defend them in this hostile culture? Activate Summit 2026 is July 16th through the 18th at the Cadence Bank Arena in Tupelo, Mississippi. And the focus this year is on God's plan for marriage and family. Speakers include Bert Harper.
Love your neighbor as yourself. Do y'all see the emphasis God puts on that?
Jeff Shreve.
The devil uses people as his pawns, so to speak.
Jessica Peck.
Stepping into their world, what they like, that's a great way to start.
And more. There's also Activate Kids, a separate track for children ages 6 to 12. And something new this year, get separate tickets for an exclusive meet and greet reception at AFA with the conference speakers on the evening of July 17th. Register now for Roots to Fruit, grounded in truth, growing in grace. Visit afa.net/summit. afa.net/summit. Okay, here's an assignment for you, if you will. I want you to take some time and think about a getaway that gives you a chance to get together with other people of faith, deepen your walk with God, and make new friends, all while enjoying the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter in Kentucky. I'm talking about joining AFA at the Ark, October 29th and 30th. This is a great opportunity to break away from the grind of everyday life and draw closer to God through special presentations from Patricia Engler and Brian Osborne of Answers in Genesis. It also includes entrance to the Creation Museum on Thursday and the Ark Encounter on Friday. Friday's dinner includes a panel discussion with Tony Vitagliano, Walker Wildman, and Wesley Wildman, Vice Presidents of American Family Association. This is an event that can fill up quickly, so hurry to afa.net/events to register for AFA at the Ark 2026. afa.net/events, and we'll see you at the Ark.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back. Pastor Jeff here talking to Dr. Willie Rice, the pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Clearwater, Florida. Willie, I will say this. I think that Florida is the best run state in America. I think that Ron DeSantis is the best governor maybe in history. He has done an excellent job. He is the standard for all governors. We have some really bad governors in the United States. I know that Tim Walz is trying to fight Gavin Newsom for who is the worst. we have issues. Now, we've been talking about the importance of the Southern Baptist Convention. We've been talking about the state of the SBC, as the documentary pointed out, how the SBC got played. Bottom line is, with all this sex abuse stuff that we had to defend against and all the reporting and all the stuff that we did as a convention, we spent over $13 million of tithes and offerings that were given to the SBC to fight. What did we get for that?
Well, not much. Might as well put it in a wheelbarrow and put it in the backyard and set it on fire for what we got, to be honest with you. And that's the tragedy. And very few people want to talk about this. Think about, again, as somebody who cares about sexual abuse, and as I've said it, and I know you do too. Yeah. We shouldn't have to say it, but let's say it. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. You're a pastor. You shepherd the flock. You know what it is to watch out for wolves. So do I. You take that very, very seriously. And if I had told you, hey, we're going to spend, and by the way, that number, we don't really know what it is. It could be higher than 13. It could be 14 million. I've been told it may approach 20 million before it's over. I don't know that we have a full accounting for how much, but it's at least north of 13 million. If I had told you that we had taken that money and we had focused in the moment that this came, we had focused on stopping predators, protecting children, and helping equip our churches to do that. You would have said, well, that's a lot of money to spend, but you know what? If we actually made our churches safer, we helped, you know, ordinary sized churches that maybe haven't, you know, had as much training as others, and we provided excellent training, excellent tools to help them protect their children and stop predators, and we raised the bar to make our church is safer than they've ever been. You would have said, well, you know what? It cost a lot, but hey, that's worth doing if we really move the needle on that. Right. The problem is it had nothing to do with that. That money has been maybe very little, but very, very little. Almost all of that has been wasted in lawsuits. By the way, none of those lawsuits deal with actual sexual abuse cases against children, for instance. They're not suing the SBC because of sexual abuse cases. The lawsuits that are taking the most attention are lawsuits that have come because of how we handled this moment and about accusations that have been made, as you said, that deal with adult relationships, most of them. There's one that's an accusation of sexual abuse, but there's zero evidence that it's true. The man is suing us for basically libeling him, defaming right. him. I don't know if that's the technical definition of the lawsuit, but he is suing us because he says, you sent out a letter and I did nothing wrong. And right. you have no evidence that I did anything wrong. By the way, that case, when people hear what's going on in that case, they really don't know yet. I talked to one of the principals in that case. When they hear what's going on in that case, it's going to make your head spin like never before. But most of these cases have simply been that we made accusations, we labeled people, we charged them with criminality in public ways without due process and without appropriate investigations, and we're being sued for that. So it's not because of sexual abuse cases. It's because we got played in this moment. That's what's costing us, and that's why people ought to be angry about how much money has been spent.
Well, Willie, as you know, when you erode people's trust, they don't want to support you. They don't want to give to you, you know, financially. You and I as pastors, that's our ability to effectively pastor boils down to, do the people trust you? Do they trust you to tell them the truth? Yep. Do they trust that you're really walking with the Lord, that you're seeking His will for the church, for their lives, for your own life and family? And if they start questioning that, you're in serious trouble. Now, we have entities. We talked a little bit during the break. The North American Mission Board, and you were saying how you are in a lot of meetings with pastors, and the question comes up about the North American Mission Board a lot because people are wondering, should I be giving to that? Can I trust that what they're doing is right? How do you field those questions?
Well, I think it's not just that. It's across the board. And yes, I have, and again, I'm very candid about, I have great friends at the North American Mission Board. Kevin Ezell is a friend of mine. I love him. I have been involved in that. I was a trustee for 4 years. So I have a background there, just in full disclosure, and consider them friends. We're involved in church planning at Calvary. We want to continue to be. So just that acknowledgement. Now, across the board, what I'm hearing are questions about trust, not just about the North American Mission Board, questions of trust. I'm doing pastors' meetings almost every day. As we record this, I'm going to First Baptist Jacksonville today with a group of pastors. Yesterday, I was in Daytona. I'm in Leesburg tomorrow. I'll be in Alabama after Easter. So I'm giving as much time as I can between now and June to talk to pastors, because it's as important as it is for me to share what's on my heart. It's more important for me to listen to what's on their heart. Mm-hmm. And here's what it's not just one entity. It's across the board right now. There's a loss of trust. There's an erosion of trust. Now, it doesn't mean like the loss of trust to the extent I'm walking away. That's not what they're saying. But they are saying, I'm concerned. And I'm hearing it again and again in the questions that I'm feeling. I don't feel like I'm being heard. I'm not sure how the money is being spent. And there are multiple reasons for the erosion of trust. Many of leaders are saying, well, it's just because of the negativity online. And that's a simplistic way of just dismissing the critics. But it's deeper than that. A statistic I've been sharing is that in 2007-2008, the total amount of cooperative program gifts from the churches, total, bottom line, from the churches, was $548 million. In 23-24, the latest years for which we have numbers, that number had dropped to $446 million in the cooperative program. That's a drop of more than $100 million in 16 years. Hmm. Now, something's going on. Mm-hmm. Something's going on. And I don't think it's even just one thing. Usually when you see a flood, there's a lot of tributaries that contributed. But we have to ask the question, what is going on? Why do people not have the confidence that that is the best way for them to use their resources to be about our Great Commission mission? Our churches are not poor. In fact, some of our mission offerings are going up. As NAM will tell you, as the IMB will tell you, Lottie Moon, Annie Armstrong are going up, which I praise God for. They've had record offerings there. But that only shows that people are willing to give. They are generous. And so why one and not the other? We've got to be asking those questions. And some people are starting to ask those questions, and hopefully we can have some really helpful conversations about that. I don't know the answers, but I know we got to have the courage to ask the questions.
Willie, we voted last year concerning the law amendment to the Southern Baptist Constitution that there are no women that are pastors that are in those positions where they're preaching and teaching, as the Bible says, that a woman is not to do that. We had from the floor the executive committee, president of the executive committee says we don't need this, it's already in place. And how do you view that? Because I know lots of pastors, that's a big concern, and we don't understand why the powers that be would be dissuading people to vote for this. Are you there?
Yeah, I had a little technical glitch there. So okay. I think I got the question, though, about the law amendment. So, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I had a little technical glitch with your, but I think I got the question.
I thought you were just being very pensive.
Yeah, on the law amendment.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go ahead. We had a little technical in me hearing you there, but the law amendment is a fascinating issue. There's an issue, and it is an issue, the idea of women pastors. And first of all, the Baptist Faith and Message is exceedingly clear on this. It equates the office of elder, pastor, and overseer. It's very clear. It was written very, very well. And it says that Baptist people, and it didn't change radically in 2000. We added that, but it really reflects what Baptist people have always believed and always practiced. That, and it was very prescient, actually, to include it in our statement of faith, to say that Southern Baptists believe there is an office of elder, pastor, overseer. Those terms are used interchangeably in the New Testament, and that is reserved for men as qualified by Scripture. And it's and when you see even like the transgenderism confusion in our culture, I know those two things don't immediately seem related, but one is downstream from the other. Mm-hmm. Gender is a part of God's beautiful creative design. It's not a glass ceiling to be broken. It's a design to be embraced. And we have churches that are confused about that terminology, and they're confused about the reality beyond the terminology. My solution is, I think we need clarity. I think we need clarity. We need to state very clearly. We do have clarity in the Baptist faith and message, but clearly we don't in the back row of the convention. So I would love to see a task force that next year says, this is what Baptist people mean when we use the term pastor. This is its historic meaning. This is its meaning in the New Testament. And this is certainly what the Baptist faith and message says. And these are the guidelines that we want to have churches that are fellowshipping with our convention. We want them to follow. I think clarity is kindness in an age of confusion. And if it's just a matter of being sloppy with titles and being sloppy with ecclesiology, then clarity can help fix that. It can send a message to churches that either, hey, I need to correct that and be very biblical and very clear about who leaders are in our churches, or I don't need to be aligned with the Southern Baptist Convention. You know, right. It will help churches make that decision. So I want to help churches make a good decision, and I want to give good guidelines for our people to know how to proceed.
Willie, do you think that there are churches, maybe more than just one or two, that need to separate themselves rather than be? It's almost like the ICE agents. You know, we're going after people that are here illegally and taking them out, and then but you can self-deport.
Yeah,
you know, I like what you said. We make it clear, and then if a church doesn't believe that, well, then don't be Southern Baptist. Would you agree with that?
Right. Clarity is, again, kindness. Clarity is kindness. It allows people to know. I describe it to like lanes on a road. If you've ever been in like a third world country where people are driving all over the road,
right.
There's confusion, there's chaos. You need lanes on the road to help people know where to go and where to be. And so when we're clear about this is what we believe in, that the Bible teaches about a pastor, then it helps churches almost, it helps them self-enforce. They can decide, I want to be a Southern Baptist church, or I don't want to be a Southern Baptist church. So we need to deal with this issue and just be able to say, this is who we are, and this is what we are going to do as a people.
Yeah. What do you see coming up in Orlando? What do you see are going to be the major issues discussed? Can you get that?
Well, I think the complementarian issue is, yeah, I did. Again, it's a little bit sketchy, the internet. But I think I got it about the major issues in Orlando. Look, I think the complementarian issue is coming up. And right. we've got to decide how we're going to do that. And there have been several proposals. One proposal is we actually ought to kind of turn the clock back and do away with the Credentials Committee and go back to where the Credentials Committee really was just not a standing committee. It just came out a few days before the convention, and that we ought to have to deal with all these issues on the convention floor. I don't think that's a good proposal. I think we need to make the Credentials Committee work. I do think there are some problems with how we're doing that, but I think we got to figure out how to make it work. I don't think you can get in a time machine and go backwards. We have some issues, so we need to step up and deal with those issues. Obviously, the presidential election is going to be a question. And I think this issue of trust and transparency is going to come up in some way. I don't know how it's going to bubble up, but we're going to have to deal with this question of, what information do messengers know? How much transparency should there be? We're going to have to deal with it in some way. I have a solution to deal with it, but I think it's going to come up in some way.
Yeah, very good. Well, our guest has been Dr. Willie Rice. And Willie, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate you, brother. Pray for you, and I hope things go well in June. I'll see you there at the Southern Baptist Convention. Thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve. Go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you. And guess what? God will use you as His witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.